In the Torah we find in Parsha Shlach that the mitzvah of Chala was given to us immediately after the Chet of the Meraglim. And the Sforno turns his attention to why this mitzvah suddenly appears in the Torah in the wake of the mitzvah of the Meraglim. And he tells us the following, that with the Chet of the Meraglim, we lost a certain connection with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And to receive the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's bracha in our own house, we needed an additional mitzvah. And that mitzvah, which we do in our own home, is the mitzvah of challah. So this was necessary to connect us again with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, that we should have the schus, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam's bracha should accompany us, be bequeathed to us in our own homes. And the Sforno cites, come back in a number of two sources in Tanakh, but we'll come back to that right away. In the Sefer HaChinuch, addresses the mitzvah of challah, but its significance is, and he tells us that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wished to give us a mitzvah which would combine really our ruchnius and our gashmius at the same time. You know, for most of history of mankind, the principal foods has been the staples, right? In rice, in Asia they eat rice, in the Western world they eat bread. That has been the principal food throughout most of human history. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave us a mitzvah to do together with the bread, the challah, so that a bracha come to us from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in our food. And furthermore, every time that we're going to eat and we're preparing the bread for ourselves, we'll have a mitzvah as well of serving the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So it both enhanced a material well-being in this world by bringing bracha from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and it further connected us to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam by giving us a mitzvah. This is the take of the Sefer HaChinuch. The Rambam puts it into a larger category that every time we have something, a gift from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, the first part of it we should give away to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. We have Bikurim, the new fruits, that we give to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Before we eat of the agricultural produce of Eretz Yisrael, the Mafish, Trumas, and Maisis, we give the Rebbeinu Shel Olam a chelik for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam before we partake. And similarly, he says, this is the notion of Chala, is Reishis HaRisoseicha, the first, what we're perhaps most anxious to take for ourselves. We finally produced something, and they say, no, that I'll dedicate to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. I'll be number two online. So this, according to the Rambam, is the notion of the mitzvah challah, which, in a larger sense, means to dedicate our best efforts to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in everything in life. Not only in the produce, but in all the talent and the energy that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has given us, first and foremost, should be a commitment to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam himself. In the Novi, in Yecheskel, we find in Perek Mem Dalet Pasuk Lamed, it talks about varied matnos kahuna, and it tells us, Horatius, Arisosechem, Titnu la Kayen, the first of your dough you should give to the Kayen, Laniach Brocha El Besecho, to bring Brocha. This brings Brocha Men HaShemayim to us, to our homes, by the mitzvah of challah. And in Melachim Aleph, Perak Yid Zayin, particularly at Pasuk Yid Gimel, but one should examine really throughout Perak Yid Zayin, this is the point in time when Eliyahu HaNavi declares that there will be a drought in Eretz Yisrael, and he has to run away. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam tells him to run away for his life, that Achav shouldn't kill him. And first he hides in one place, and then the Rabbeinu Shalom told him to change his place and go to a different place. And he told him, the first place the Rabbeinu Shalom sustained in Menashe Mayim. Orvim came and brought him food, and he had a special spring of water which came to sustain him. In the new place, the Rabbeinu Shalom tells him, this woman who's going to take care of you. She'll take care of you. I think in Almona it says, she'll take care of you. The Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't tell him who this is going to be. And the Rabbeinu Shalom just tells him that she's going to receive a bracha that halechem, it's a time of famine, halechem is leisichla. She'll never run out of bread. She'll always have what to eat. Eliyahu Novi comes to the town, the city that the Rabbeinu Shalom sent him to, and he has no idea who this woman is. So he does the same thing that Eliezer Eved Avram did. Eliezer Eved Avram went to the well and said, who's going to supply me with water? So he asked this woman if she has some bread and some water for him. And she says, I have very, very little. I'll give you, but I have very, very little. So he understands that this is the woman that the Rabbeinu Shalom has sent him to. And it says that she gave him bread. The Radak tells us, based on Chazal, that the bread Eliyahu was a kohen, and the bread that she gave him was challah. She was mekayem mitzvah challah. And in the schus of that mitzvah challah, the Rabbeinu Shalom said that karakemach leisichla. Throughout all the years, there were years of hunger because of the drought that Eliyahu Hanavi brought, she would have no problems. The Rabbeinu Shalom gave special bracha to her. So this is a story, really, which parallels the story with Elisha. Right? That he comes to the house of Avadi the Novi, and the Noisha comes, the creditor comes, and he asks, so what do you have in the house? And he says, what do I have in the house? I have a little bit of oil. So he tells her, go borrow as many vessels as she can, liquid containers, and he starts pouring oil, and it fills up and up and up and up and up and up. So in effect, this is, in its own way, but Eliyahu, his great master, did too. That the Rabbeinu Shalom's bracha is going to come. She tells him that after this, after I eat now, that's it. My food is gone. There's nothing left. And in that last piece of lechem, that's where the Rabbeinu Shalom gives the bracha. And a bracha that karakemach leisichla, that she will have, means to sustain herself throughout the entire drought. So Eliyahu really preceded Elisha with this undertaking. And this is tied to mitzvah challah. She was mekayem mitzvah challah, and through that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave her a bracha, which is endless. So when we undertake to fulfill this mitzvah, so we're invoking a phenomenal bracha from the Rabbeinu Shalom, liach bracha el beisecho, to bring a bracha to our homes. This is a phenomenal bracha that we get from being mekayem mitzvah challah. That's why, as I mentioned last time, the Chofetz Chaim laments the fact that in his time already, people started purchasing challahs instead of making challah. And we find that it's a mitzvah, particularly in Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontif, or for Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontif, to make challah, so that we have the opportunity to be mekayem mitzvahs, the mitzvah of challah. So that's a mitzvah. If I would ask how many people fulfill it, how many times a year, and I don't want to ask, because something which was axiomatic, we rarely fulfill nowadays. So I can't lobby that you should make challahs every week. That's a little bit too difficult to do. But at least a number of times throughout the year, you should make challah. Just so you should have the opportunity to be mafresh challah, be mekayim the mitzvah. We'll start off, I'll try to go through a lot of the highlights of the dinim. And we'll start with the following. First of all, which things are we obligated to take challah? So we'll go into it more specifically later. But the first requirement is the dough be made from one of the five species of grain. From wheat, barley, oats, rye, or spelt. If it's made from anything else, there's no mitzvah challah. So one of those five. That's requirement number one. Requirement number two is, what amount of dough do we have to make to be obligated to separate challah? Now, one of the problems that we consistently have in the halacha is that there was no universal system of measurement in the ancient world. So we have descriptive measurements, but not measurements that we could just readily take out a ruler or a measuring cup and say, this is the amount. But told how many eggs something is, what's the size of an olive? But then we're left with the question, what's an olive and what's an egg? What size? So we always struggle when it comes to shiurim to pin down exactly what the shiur for anything is. And we have a pretty wide range. Basically, there are some that say from 2.6 pounds, just over 2.5 pounds, one should be mafresh without a brocha. But the most common practice, at least in this country, is that from 3 pounds we're mafresh without a brocha, and once we have 5 pounds we're mafresh with a brocha. Now, because we measure this way, we really avoid a major issue. And that issue is the measurements of the Torah are really volume measurements. They're not weight measurements, but they're volume measurements. So the question is, let's say I made a dough, and the nature of dough is that it rises. So it's after a while, it could be double or triple the size of what you started. So because we use a weight measure, we avoid this problem altogether. But the Shulchan Aruch does say that the size, what it was when you started, that's what it is at the end. It doesn't make a difference if it gets bigger. And it looks like it has a share. Challah is determined at the moment that we mix the flour and the water together. That's when the mitzvah comes. And that determines the mitzvah. What size proportion it takes later on is of no consequence. Now, we'll try to do this in some orderly fashion. There's a lot of detail. But we'll start off. We'll start off with a chiddush of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And that is, so if I have one dough and it has 5 pounds, I'm mafresh with a brocha. Suppose I intend to use this dough in two different times. I made a dough, 5 pounds, and I have two possibilities now. I'm not going to use the whole thing this week. I can take half and put it into the freezer, and I'll take it out next Thursday and I'll bake it for next Shabbos. Or I'll bake everything now, and I'll take the half to finished challahs and put them in the freezer for next week. So what is the status then of the brocha? So the Shlomo Zalman Zatzal takes the position that if I bake all of them in the challahs presently, and I'm going to put half away for next week's use or another time's use, then I mafresh challah with a brocha. But if I'm going to put away half the dough now and use it for a different time, then I should be mafresh challah but not make a brocha. This is the position that Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is a big chiddush. But he was one of the greatest poskim of the world. Now, the most common problem that we have is that we have a dough and it doesn't have the requisite 5 pounds to make a brocha. And I make another dough, and the other dough also doesn't have 5 pounds. A lot of times this is because the utensils that we use are not ready to accommodate 5 pounds of flour. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of mixes are not even strong enough. If you try to make a dough with 5 pounds of flour, you could burn the motor out also in many mixes. It's very hard. Dough is very heavy and thick. So a lot of times what happens is we make more than one dough. Can we combine them in a fashion which will allow us to take challah with a brocha, or combine them in a fashion which will let us take challah without a brocha? So there are a number of possible ways that these doughs can become combined. We can combine them by pressing the two doughs together, so that if I pull them apart, one will pull off a piece of the other one. They can no longer just be separated along the fault line that connected them. They're well attached. That has a halacha. Now I have a 5-pound dough. That's considered a dough. More commonly, this is less common that we're likely to do this, especially in today's world. But what we're more likely to do is I baked 5 challahs now. Then I baked another 5 challahs from another dough afterwards. I can take those 10 challahs. I can put them into a big plastic bag that they all fit inside of. And that's considered what we call tsiruf sal. They're combined by being in the same container. And now it's considered one shear. So now I have more than 5 pounds together in one place. So now I can be mafresh challah v'brocha. So a little bit I want to expand upon this, that if we're combining different things, they have to be all contained inside the vessel on which we place them. Meaning to say, let's say I have a box and I stack up the box, and now I have, well, 2 challahs don't fit. So I put them on top of the challahs that are in the box, but they're not within the walls of the box itself. So the Shulchan Aruch says that that's not good. It does not become combined. From the Shulchan Aruch, it would appear that as long as the challahs on the top are partially within the walls of the box, even though they stick out above it, then one would also be able to take challah. The Bach disagrees with that, and he says even if they stick out a little bit, one shouldn't take challah. And the Vilna Gaon, on the other hand, cites a source. He doesn't indicate that he paskins it, but he cites a source that once we have something like a box, anything with a rim to it, sidewalls, even if the challahs are stacked up all the way on the top, way above the walls, they're still considered in one container. Halacha l'maaseh, what we should do is very simple. What we do when they stick out above the top of the box is we take a towel and we cover over everything that's under it. So it has the box on the bottom and covered by the towel on the top. And that's considered as contained within the box. If they're just, we put them down on a table, then we need to put them on a tablecloth and wrap the tablecloth all around the challahs. And then that's considered combined, and we can be mafresh challah from them. So again, either we put them totally within a container. If it doesn't fit, it sticks out above the top, we should cover it with a towel. And then we can be mafresh b'brocha. And if it's directly on a table, we should put it on top of a tablecloth or a big towel. And then the table that we should use to wrap the challahs on the top two, so they're enveloped on all sides, and then this is considered now combined into one entity. So this is a way that oftentimes when we don't actually have a shear of challah at the beginning, but we have many different doughs, and these doughs can be combined either in the dough shape, or more likely in our world, in the finished product shape, once we have the challahs or the cakes that we're making, that we can combine them and be mafresh challah from them. Now, right now when I'm talking about cakes, let me be very specific. I'm only talking about, at this point in time, I will come back later, mirtz Hashem, to others, but right now I'm talking about yeast cakes, things that are made with a bread dough, that type of dough. If it's not as thick as that, I'm not talking about that presently. I'll come back to that later on, what the status of that is. It's an entirely different din if you make with a regular conventional cake dough that we make. But I'm talking about either a yeast dough, like you'd make for Danishes or a babka or something like that, and bread doughs. If we put them all into a basket or a bushel, it's preferable that all of the challah should be touching each other. This is, again, a big, big machlokes. The Vilna Gaon and the Shulchan Aruch do not seem to be machmer like this. Seem to say as long as it's within a container, even if the matzahs inside don't touch, it's fine. But there are others that do say it has to touch. The Chofetz Chaim quotes, in fact, mentions in the Mishnah Berurah at one point this view. So if you're putting them into a box to combine all of them, you should press them next to each other. They should touch each other. This is what's preferable. Now, combinations have a limitation. The first and foremost limitation on combinations is it has to be the same type. If I'm making two different types of things and I would not want to combine them, I'm making whole wheat bread and regular bread. I'm making a chocolate cake and a banana cake. So I want separate types. I don't want this all together. Then I cannot put them into a box and combine them to make a share. It's only if the two are compatible with each other. I don't mind. I would mix the two together. It's essentially not different from my perspective that I can combine the different things together. So this is a very, very important point. It's an important limitation that we just can't take. Well, you know, I made a bunch of chocolate cake, I made a bunch of banana cake, and now I'm going to put them into a bag and I'm going to be mafresh challah. It's not going to go. Now, I want to go forward. Later, I'll come back to some more details. I don't want to get lost right now in the details. I'm trying to give a general picture first, and then I'll come back to further details. What's the method that we're mafresh challah? How are we mafresh challah? Number one. And how much do we have to take when we are mafresh challah? The methodology is we can take a piece of the dough, hold it in our hand, make a brocha. The brocha that we make is lahafresh challah. There's no necessity of saying lahafresh challah mina isa. It's the mina isa you could drop. We don't know. It's common that people use it. The Taz says he doesn't know why people say it all together. And the brocha should be lahafresh challah. In fact, there are many different versions of the brocha. There are versions of the brocha which have lahafresh truma, because it's called, challah is also called truma. There are versions which have chalas truma, all types of versions. The common version that we use is lahafresh challah. That's the one that's in use by us. If I take a piece, we'll see how big the piece will be in a moment, in my hand, I make the brocha, and after I make the brocha, I say harezu challah. This is very important, and it's a step which is often forgotten. I have to make a declaration. I declare this, that this is the challah. Harezu challah, this is the challah. Then I take it and wrap it up, and we'll see what to do with it afterwards. The halach of challah is comparable to the halach of truma. The halach of truma is midoraisa chita achas pateras kol akri. I can take a whole bushel, and I can take one grain from that bushel, and that I'm yitzit in truma with it. The Rabbanon said I should not do it in that fashion. The Rabbanon said I should do it in a fashion where I either give 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th, depending how much of a tight water open hand I have. Similarly by challah, all I need is a tiny crumb, one little tiny piece, and I yotze the mitzvah deraisa. But the Rabbanon said the point of this mitzvah is to support the kohenim. So if everyone's going to take just a tiny piece of grain, what's the tiny piece of crumb of bread, what's the kohen going to have? So they obligated a private person to take 1/24th, right, a little over 4% for challah. And a baker who's professionally baking and has a lot of challah, he has to do 1/48th. However, this was only assuming that we lived at a time that the kohenim would be able to eat the truma. Nowadays, the kohenim can't eat the truma for two different reasons. Number one, we assume that everybody is tamei meis, that everyone is tamei. And number two, we're not so sure who a kohen is. We don't know who our kohenim are necessarily. Most people, we have what we call a cheskas kohen. They are assumed to be kohenim, and it's a good assumption. But we're not 100% sure. We haven't checked it to be have 100% certainty. They don't necessarily have a yichus paper which goes back all the way to a kohen that served in the Beis HaMikdash. So we don't know 100% for sure who's a kohen. For these reasons, we do not consume truma bizman hazeh at all. Consequently, since what we're going to do, what are we going to do with the challah that we have? With the challah that we're going to have, we're going to destroy it. We'll come back to that soon. it's not going to be of any use to the Kohen. So therefore, the halacha, the strict halacha is we need to take one tiny crumb. That's all we need to do for challah. But, you know, this goes all the way back to Kayin and Hevel. Kayin was a utilitarian. Kayin said, listen, the Rav Edersham doesn't eat ribsteak. I eat ribsteak. So now if I have a fat, juicy animal, so what's the point of giving it to the Rav Edersham on the Mizbeach? He's not eating the ribsteaks anyhow. I'll eat the ribsteaks. So let me take a skinny cow, which has rib steaks, which are not going to be too pleasing to me. And that's good for the Rabbeinu Shalom on the Mizbeach. And I'll go home and eat the steaks. Everybody will be happy. This was Kayin's view, a utilitarian view. Hevel said that he's mistaken. That because when we do that, and the Novi is very, very critical of those in history that did it. He says, if you brought Iver or Piseach, a Chayla, you brought an animal which was blinded, a lame, or ill. So if you brought it to a temporal king, would he be satisfied? Would he accept it? So the Novi says. So how do you bring that before the Rabbeinu Shalom? And this is what Hevel said. We need, it's not what the Rabbeinu Shalom needs, it's what we need. If I take the best and I dedicate that to the Rabbeinu Shalom, then I appreciate the mitzvah that I'm doing. The mitzvah is significant. If I give the junk to the Rabbeinu Shalom, so, you know, what's a mitzvah? Whatever, the junk is good for the mitzvahs. So the question is not that the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to eat the rib steak. The question is how I deal with it. Am I raising the greatness of the magnitude of a mitzvah, the greatness of a mitzvah, how much I appreciate a mitzvah through what I do, or am I degrading the mitzvah by the action that I'm taking? So for that reason, the minig emerged, the Maril tells us, the minig is that we take a kezias, we use a kezias for challah, like the size of a half an egg. That's the piece, the minimum piece that we should take off. So that we take off that piece, we make the bracha, and then we say, harezu challah. So now we successfully completed mitzvah's challah. Now the question is, what are we going to do with this? Now, you know, the world has a joke. The world says that the problem with the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth, the ships, is by the time they're so big, by the time you turn them around, it's time to turn them around again. And in Jewish history, we struggle with this problem all the time. The world changes around us, but it takes us a while to catch up to the fact that the world has changed and we have to do things a little bit differently. In earlier times, they had hearth ovens. A hearth oven is at a very, very high temperature. If you take the challah and you throw it into it, first of all, the challah burns up in seconds. It just ignites and explodes into flame. Secondly, the oven is that hot that there are no kashrus issues. It's self-kashering constantly because of the enormous heat that oven uses. The ovens today that we have are not typically hot enough to kasher themselves, number one. And number two, they don't very efficiently burn the challah that we put into it. If we took it out of the oven and looked inside, probably the middle is still white. It's not going to burn. It's just not, we don't want to throw enough heat in that particular fashion. And the third issue is, and the Shach points this out and others, that if the challah touches the oven, then the oven has to be kashered. Because why? The Gemara says in Zvachim that the carbona, the food for the carbonas had to be cooked before people ate it. And since there's a din of noiser, that which was absorbed into the pot in the cooking process becomes noiser when the time of the carbon expired. So now I can't cook it, new food in it, because I'm going to wind up with noiser, like cooking in a tray for pots. So they had to kasher those pots regularly. And the same is true here. Who can eat from a utensil in which we put a hot challah? A kohen. If I'm a Yisrael, I cannot eat the food that was produced in that pot. So nowadays, nobody's a vada kohen. Even the guy down the block that says he's a kohen can't eat it. So we certainly have to be careful not to have that challah touch the oven. For all of these many reasons, I came to the conclusion, and I did find that Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, one of his forum, came to the same conclusion as I did. I'm not sure his reasons, but that's the bottom line, that he came to the same conclusion, that in our home ovens, we should not endeavor to burn the challah. We should take it, put it in a plastic bag, tie it closed, and throw it out. And this parallels what they do in Eretz Yisrael, when one is mafresh, trumas and maisras. So the maisras are edible. The truma is not edible, so we have to get rid of it. So what they do is they put it into a bag, they tie it closed, so it should not be bizoyan, we should not be degraded by being thrown directly into the garbage, and then we throw it out. So that's what I suggest that we do. Now, I don't suggest either. There's another possibility, and I'm not a big fan of it, and you'll find in certain places that the ladies save the challah. They put it in the freezer, and they keep it. Then comes before Pesach, they take out a big, and they go around, and there's guys that go around with little ovens and burn it up. But it's really not wise to keep it around, because someone else may use it and not realize that it's challah. And they say, oh, it's a piece of dough. I want to make some cookies today. And they'll go and use it. So it's not a wise idea to have this lying around. Things that lie around somehow tend to make trouble for us, you know. They come back and they bite. So I do not recommend keeping it around. So this is the basic scenario of how we have to go about challah. Now, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says the following, that when do we have to take off a kezias, right, the size of half an egg, that we're assuming that we made a whole shear of challah. Let's say I have one roll today. That's all I have. From somebody made a dough, and they gave me one roll. And they said, whatever, we're going to make for challah tomorrow. And I have one roll. So it came from a dough which had a shear. So it's mechuyev and challah. And now I have it. I want to eat it today. And the person did not take challah from the whole dough yet. So if I'm going to take off a kezias, I'm going to be left pretty shorthanded, right? All I have is one little roll in the first place. And now I'm going to take off a kezias. Or I have one matzah. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, so Tzal writes that in that case, when I have a little bit, it suffices just to take off like a tiny bit. You don't have to take a whole shear of a kezias. Okay, any questions until now? Yeah, Dina.
When do we say refuah for people?
There's a minog by the mitzvahs, which are particularly are fulfilled by the women, that the women are mispalel after they do the mitzvah. So you finish them like by adlokas neiros. First you finish the mitzvah. After you did harezu chala, then you mispalel. Then it's a time. It's a schus. As we said, it's loniach brocha toch beisecho. Right? The schus of the neiros is also, there's a special schus. It says, a rogo b'neir havi leibonim tamidei chachamim. A person that's medactic and neiros is a special schus to be zoicha to children, Tamidei Chachamim, that will bring the light of Torah to the world. Yes?
If my dough is a little bit sticky sometimes, so I take off the challah and I say, Harizu challah, and then some of the dough...
So what I do and tell people to do in such a case, that you shouldn't have it, if it's a sticky dough, hold it with a piece of plastic, like in a plastic bag. That's what I tell people to do, so you avoid this problem of having the challah stick. Yeah?
Just to clarify the order, a person should...
You can take it off before. It doesn't make a difference. Either way, I don't see any problem either way. Yes?
I have a recipe that is 5 pounds, and it says take off 1 or 2 cups. So then if you do that, you can't say a bracha?
Correct.
So you should just put in the whole bag?
Yes. Well, generally not. That's exactly the point. You want to have two different types. We don't want the two types mixed together, so you cannot combine them.
What do you do in that case?
If you take what each one is. If it has 3 pounds, you take challah without a brocha. If it has 5 pounds, you take challah with a brocha. And if not, you don't take challah at all. No. We'll get to this in a moment. Let me explain to you. There's a halacha. The source of this halacha is in the halachas of shechita. That's where the Shulchan Aruch discusses it. A sheikh comes to the slaughterhouse, and he's going to shech tens of animals today. He makes a bracha on the first shechita, and as long as he doesn't go out, he stays in the same place, he doesn't make a new bracha. Keeps shechting because he had an intention at the beginning to do the mitzvah many times, he makes one bracha. Similarly, if I know I have this dough and this dough, they're all here now, or they're going to be coming one after the other, I make a bracha on the first one, and all the rest of them, which even if the dough wasn't made yet, I don't make a bracha on the later ones. I just do the mitzvah of challah. Anyone else? Yeah. Yeah.
I make one dough, but I'm going to use some for challah, some for pizza, and some for
pizza. I think the answer is no. It's not different than the case that I told you. If I'm going to put it away to use it for some other use, that certainly, I don't think you need to make a bracha. I will look further. What? Yeah, I don't think you need to make a bracha, but I'm not 1,000% sure. I will think about it further. Yeah, you could be certainly not with you. Could be mafresh without a bracha. You may be exempt, but to be mafresh without a bracha, you certainly won't lose by that. Yeah. The mitzvah of challah is actually to take it off when it's a dough. That's when we should be mafresh. If we weren't mafresh, then we could be mafresh all the way, even after we baked it, we could also be mafresh. But the mitzvah is to do it when it's dough.
So if I'm taking the dough and putting it in the fridge to make it the next day.
So whatever, you could be mafresh right away. As soon as you made the dough, you
could
be mafresh.
Can I do it the next day before?
Yeah, you could do that also. Yeah. Yeah.
To burn the dough, you actually
burn
on top of the stove,
and
the actual flame.
Probably in the actual flame is not a problem because you don't put the food that ever touches there anyhow. And the flame, if it's a flame under it, it doesn't absorb. So you probably are safe with what you're doing. Yeah.
I'll breathe the challahs, and then it gets very late, and instead of baking them, I'll freeze the...
So that I mentioned earlier, of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, if you don't bake them all in one shot, you only bake part of the shear, and the other rest of the shear you leave over, you're mafresh without a bracha.
The pizza that the question about taking out a cup of flour from 5 pounds of
yeah.
flour... Well, let's say if I use that extra cup of flour to use while I'm braiding, it is getting eventually into the dough. It's just not...
Well, if you're adding flour to the dough, it's fine. But then do not do the mitzvah of challah until you've finished adding that challah.
The challahs are braided.
Yes, correct. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says, in fact, that if you're adding flour... You should really wait until you finish braiding the challahs, making the challahs, so that everything is already added and everything is included in the mitzvah. Yeah.
So I have two questions. One about the sticky dough. So a lot of times to avoid that, this is the raisin challah, I put in the slice of bread before.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
And the other thing is, you would have to have raisin challah no matter what type of thing you're making. So what thing... You're making some, like you said, some pasta.
Yeah, I may not. If you made the two doughs separately, they certainly wouldn't combine because they're two different minimum, and you don't want. Yeah, I understand, but they're two different purposes. I'll think about it still. Yes, Sandy.
Okay, I thought you said earlier that the mixer is mixing the dough.
No, that's when the mitzvah comes, after you mix the dough.
So does it matter if one person, like if two people do it, who makes the bracha? Like if one person makes the dough, and the next person's going to be
doing it? Well, listen, the one that said the bracha is the one that's getting the mitzvah. The other one made bread today.
But it doesn't matter if it's one for a house. It doesn't matter if it's still on the person, not on the house?
I'm not sure what you mean. It's on the...
I'm like, somebody in your house.
Yeah.
Is doing it for the house.
So they still let part of. They do. They were not. They did not fulfill the mitzvah of challah. Whoever was mafresh the challah fulfilled the mitzvah. And the other.
And we could do it then before it rises.
Yeah, you could do it before it rises.
My mother makes a dark and light braid together. So it's one dough, and then she takes half it and adds, I believe, cocoa. And then, so it's kind of like two, it's not whole wheat and regular. So
yeah, that's exactly the point. She made it to put them together, so she has no concern about them being put together. That's the bottom line there. Yeah.
So I was under the impression that the dough that we are mustering has some sort of
tumor
to it, so I've been using a paper towel to hold it.
No, it's fine if it doesn't have tumor to it. It's a whole complicated thing. We prefer that it be made in a fashion which is tummy, because it's easier to deal with it afterwards than if it's tar. But that's a whole technical point in the Shulchan Aruch. It's not going to be metamayu. No, it's not. It's not. It's a technical point. It does not have real relevance to you and your what you're doing. Again? No. No. As long as you pass bas mitzvah, you have the same mitzvah as anybody else. Typically, yes. Let me explain where you're coming from, but I will tell you as far as I understand in the how this works. In a whole wheat flour, you have bran, particularly, and you may have some wheat germ, some germ in it, or some of the germ. The bran is counted as, let's say I made a whole wheat dough altogether. So the halacha is that the bran, even though it's not the wheat itself, is considered part of the shear. If I took the bran out and then I put it back in afterwards, that bran is no longer considered part of the shear. I do not believe that nowadays they're making whole wheat flour in that particular process, as far as I know. So therefore, the shear still remained 5 pounds. Yeah, Yudas. No, I don't know any reason. I do not know any reason in today's world. In the time of the Gemara, there was such a thing, the concern, whatever, but it's not relevant. In the world where we don't observe the halachas of Tumah and Taira, it makes no difference. Kazayas, the size of a half an ala, a half an egg, of a medium egg, really. So it takes half the size. You have a larger, an extra large egg, a half the size of that egg. That's all. That's it. Sounds like something the size of a golf ball, about. It's the same thing. If they're combined with each other, you take challah once. If not, you take challah twice. Yeah. Yes. If they're combined, you take one golf ball. If they're not combined, you take two.
Yeah.
It's not better to combine. If you did, you did. If you didn't, you didn't. Yes. So, you don't combine them. No, you're doing one. If you didn't go out of your house, you stick with one bracha. You don't have to. You make one bracha. Yes.
Yeah, but you're still taking the
things
anyway.
Well, yeah, each one you have to, each dough you take from, but each, you didn't go out, you make one bracha for the day. That's something else. Then you can say you have to make another bracha, perhaps. Yeah.
It's just, all you can buy called Grandma's challah, that's already, the dough and everything's made, and you just let it rise and make it. It says that the challah is already taken.
So yeah, that means the factory took challah, which usually, no. You can't do it. Not that you don't have to. You can't. Yeah, Rivka.
When we take a 5-pound bag, like we're having today, there's always some
reduction. Don't worry. Don't fetch so much. Don't fetch so much. Thank you.
Expect less.
Yeah.
To combine 2 5-pound folds, do they have to be, let's say, together, or can they have to, like, a towel or half of the people as close as 5 pounds?
It has to be, or you cannot have it in 2 separate kalim. Either it should be in 1 keli, yeah, or they should be, the 2 doughs should be pushed together with each other. They have to be enough. I told you that if you pulled one, it would take a piece of the other one. That's how much they have to be connected.
It doesn't have to be in a bowl.
You could put it on a towel, yeah, and push them to connect it. Or you could put it on a towel and wrap the towel around them, then it would be also connected.
And if it's just 1 5-pound
basket, I told you, if it sticks out of the... No, it does not have to be covered. The problem, it does not have to be covered because it's one dough. No, because you don't have to worry. That's why. Till you say harezu chala, it's not chala. So that's, you know.
My cousin is smart, and he won't bake them all 5 pounds.
You don't have to bake them in the oven in one shot. If you made a 5-pound dough, it's b'chuyav and chala. That's it.
Even
it takes 2 hours to do it all, 3 hours.
Okay, can I cook them in the
microwave? Yes. I don't believe, as I said, I believe the issue is, was the bran removed and put back? So if you want to investigate the particular flour that you're using, call up the company and find out. And if they take the bran out and put it back, then you have to find out what percentage is the bran and add that percent. But I do not believe that's the typical way that they make whole wheat flour nowadays. You should put it on for an hour at the highest heat, if you did that, yes. Now, let's go forward a little bit, and then we'll take some more questions.
If you have heat made over a course of a month.
If you made what?
Over the course of a month. A whole bunch of chocolate cake,
yes. We'll come to cakes soon, what the story is with cakes. And I told you, I'll come back to that. Now, there's a limitation in challah. This is important. The Torah says, Reishis Ariso Seichel. Reishis means that it's the first part. It means this part that I leave over. I can't take the whole dough and make it into challah. That doesn't work. There has to be a challah part and a remainder part. So this is important, that we cannot turn the whole thing into challah. Now, what happens, I baked challahs for Shabbos, and I forgot to be mafresh challah. And now it's Friday night, it's already, my husband comes home for shul, we're about to sit down to start the meal, and lo and behold, I realize that I didn't wasn't mafresh challah. What's the dinner? What do I do now? And it's, one may not be mafresh challah on Shabbos. So this comes out, there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael with the mitzvah, even though the mitzvah bizman hazeh in contemporary times, and even in the second bias, was only midrabanan, but it was rooted in a mitzvah deraisa. During the first bias, it was deraisa. The mitzvah is challah, and the second bias is only midrabanan, in the time of Ezra and on. But in the first bias, it needs the entire Klal Yisrael, all the to be in Eretz Yisrael, all the Shvatim, which they didn't have in the second bias. But the root of the mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is a deraisa dika root. And therefore, if one forgot to be mafresh challah, there's nothing that I can do in Eretz Yisrael. I have to be mafresh challah before I can start eating. Challah Chutz La'aretz is a mitzvah which the Rabbanon enacted. For what reason? Shalitish takach teres challah. That we shouldn't forget that there's a mitzvah challah. So one day the Beis HaMikdash will be built, and we'll know that we have to be mafresh challah. But since the entire mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz is midrabanan, so there's a special halacha, meaning that I can eat from it, and leave over part and take the challah after Shabbos. But this does not apply in Eretz Yisrael. So if in Chutz La'aretz, if one forgot to take the challah, so I just have to make sure that from each dough I left over part of it enough that I can take off part to make a truma and leave over another piece not to be truma, because I can't make the whole thing truma. So this is a special leniency that we have in Chalas Chutz La'aretz. Once someone came to me in Eretz Yisrael once, one of the times that I was there, and they asked me what to do. Their wife baked challah before Shabbos, and they forgot to be mafresh challah. And Eretz Yisrael, you can't use, there's no heter. You just have to wait, you have to be mafresh challah before one may start to consume the challahs. Yes, you have to wait till after Shabbos.
Yeah, like you don't have to
yeah, whatever. Can't do it. It's not kosher, that's it.
But if you do it here, it's not shalim anymore.
What?
But if you break off a piece here, then how is it shalim for
when? For what do you want to break off a piece for?
She said, no, you'll eat it.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, you leave it at the end. Yeah, from each, something from each dough, yes.
So every milk, you have milk, every milk.
No, if it's all from one dough, you wouldn't have to.
Oh, you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to make a bracha if you do that.
Yeah, you would, after Shabbos you would make a bracha. Yeah, yeah.
Do you have to put it aside before you
start? No, no. Okay, you just have to make sure you say again, shh. If you forgot to be mafresh challah before, and make sure you leave over part to be mafresh challah after Shabbos from that, and eat the rest on Shabbos. With a bracha, after Shabbos, that is. Now, one of the shaylos that I get that happens is we're mafresh challah, and then we manage to mix the challah back into everything else. You know, sometimes I take one bilkul and I make it, and all of a sudden it's back, and it's somewhere in the midst of 30 bilkul. Here, one of them is the challah. I have no idea which one it is. A part of the dough got mixed back in. I put it aside for challah, and I mixed it back in again. And then, lo and behold, I look around for the challah vanilla. It disappeared. So now I have a problem, because I have a dough, or I have challahs that have truma mixed, I have challah mixed into it. So there are a number of resolutions to this. The simplest resolution is that there's, in the same process that there is a Toras Nedorim, one could go to a Beis Din and remove a neder. Anything which was sanctified, which was made Kodesh, I was makdish it because of a statement that I made, I can rescind that statement by doing a form of Ataras Nedorim. So therefore, I can rescind the fact I said that the Harezu Chala, that statement could be rescinded. And now we go back to go nothing is chala again, and we start again from scratch. That's the simplest way to do it. There are other methods of doing it as well. What? It's like a form of Ataras Nedarim. You have to go to our Rav that knows about this, but it's a form of Ataras Nedarim. And this is the simplest way. You can also do something else. You can make another dough, which has a shear, and be mafresh from that dough. No, this is not good. No, this is not going to work for this. I'm sorry. This is for another case. I'm sorry. So this is what happens if the challah got mixed back in again. Now. Yes. Get it out. Exactly. Get rid of it before it comes back to bite you. We'll see there are other cases where things got mixed together, but it's complicated. It had to be mafresh truma. We'll see soon. But this is the method that the Shulchan Aruch tells us if they're mixed together. I can combine all types of flour into a dough. But if I made, once I made those and I want to combine them as those, I have a spelt dough, and I have a wheat dough, and I have a rye dough, this is an endless story. I'm not going to go get into the details, which things combine with which things don't combine with which. It's a whole story in its own right. So, you know, the best is not to go down that avenue altogether. Of combining different types of doughs with each other. Because, as I said, there's a huge story in the Shulchan Aruch, this type of the five minim combines with this, and this with this, and this not with this. It's endless. I did not want to go into this, because I don't think it's overly particularly practical that we're going to take, once we made two different types of doughs, then we're going to combine both of them into one unit. I don't think that's likely to happen. Now, one thing which is particularly, I don't know if years ago I would have talked about it, but now we're using all types of alternate flours today, and rice flour. If one mixes rice flour and wheat flour, and between the two of them, there's a shear, but there's not a shear of wheat without the rice flour. So the halacha is, if there's not enough wheat to be 5 pounds of wheat, and I mixed it with rice flour, then I have to be mafresh without a bracha. If there's enough wheat to have a shear, even if there's much more rice flour than wheat flour, if it still has the taste of wheat to it, then I take t'challah with a bracha. So again, if I combine, it's a special thing, but if I combine rice with wheat, and the wheat doesn't have a shear, but together with the rice it has a shear, so we're mafresh. In other words, there's 5 pounds of flour, 4 pounds of wheat flour, and 1 pound of rice flour. So the halacha is a mafresh without a bracha. If there are 5 pounds of wheat flour, and beyond that, there's rice flour, and there's 10 pounds of rice flour, but it still tastes of wheat, then I can be mafresh with a bracha. But no longer tastes of wheat, then I can't be mafresh with bracha. Now, if I made mixed other things other than wheat, the other four species of grain, barley, spelt, oats, and rye, together with rice flour. So no matter how much, even if there is a share of those other ones, and they're mixed with the rice flour, if they're mixed with the rice flour, but you would not make a bracha. Let's leave this part out. This, I don't want to, it's going to get too complex. No, it's just a special dinner in rice flour.
Oh,
it's a special thing with rice, whatever. No, it would not. This is only a special thing. Again, so if you have basically, if you have wheat flour and rice flour combined, and together they're 5 pounds, you mafresh without a bracha. If there's 5 pounds of wheat flour plus even a preponderance of rice flour, as long as you can still taste the wheat taste to it, then you mafresh with a bracha. Now, what's very, very important to know is the following. Because one cannot be mafresh challah from flour. I'll go over and I'll take a bunch of flour out of the bag and I'll say, arezu challah, and that's it. I'll get rid of it. Why can I not do it? Because the mitzvah hasn't come yet. The mitzvah is once there's a dough, then there's a chiyuv challah. On flour, there's no chiyuv challah. So one cannot be mafresh challah from flour. Now, it's very, very interesting that there's actually a halacha, it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that Chazal was so concerned that we should maintain the observance of mitzvah challah, that we may not willfully or purposefully make a dough. Well, you know, if I take 5 pounds of flour, I'm going to have to be mafresh challah, or 3 pounds without a bracha. I'll make 2.5 pounds of flour, so I don't have to be mafresh challah at all. I don't want to be bothered. One is not allowed to do it. It's a contravention of the halacha. If I have a reason, a specific reason, I don't have more flour, or perhaps I can't use more than that now, or we have a special thing that we do, and when we make matzahs, one of the halachas in matzah is that we should make small doughs. Because the larger the dough, the harder it is to mix all the flour properly and make sure that there's not just uncombined flour left in the dough. So we, for that reason, we use a shear, which is about 3 pounds of flour we use in each dough. So it doesn't add the full share of the 5 pounds it doesn't have. But that we do because the halacha dictates that we use small amounts of flour, not to make a very large dough. So that the Achronis specifically say it's permissible because we're not trying to dodge, in fact, doing the mitzvah. And in fact, we do the mitzvah because we combine the matzahs afterwards in baskets and we're mafresh challah from everything. There's nothing that we're not mafresh challah from. But if I did it, but if I'm doing it for the purpose of avoiding mitzvah challah, that is a contravention of the halacha. That's how significant the chazal it was that we should keep on doing mitzvah challah. Well, I want to tell you something else. You know, the Pasuk actually says in many places in the Torah, challah is matzahs. Challah is a loaf. It does not tell me what its composition, if it's bread or it's matzah. So we actually have a Pasuk, challah is matzahs, many times in the Torah. Yeah.
We don't have enough flour to make a bracha. Do you still say have ready flour?
No, you always have to say Arezu Chala. Yes. Okay, now.
Oh, you mean even if you don't say Bracha, just by taking the Chala, you have to say it?
You have to say Arezu Chala, yes.
Yes.
Now. You hopefully had in mind that it's the challah and the kid, so that's but the yevid you probably yotze with that. Now, who may take challah? Only the one that owns it may take challah from it, unless they specifically appoint someone else to do it in their stead, as their agent. But if you come to my house and we make challah together, for example, you cannot take challah from my flour, my dough, that I own without my permission.
So,
we just tell the person they have permission on your ass, yes. Otherwise, you can't take challah. Only the owner can take challah. Only the owner can take truma. Well, yeah, I presume that the one that tells you to take challah is authorized by the owner to let you do it, you know? You don't have to assume that he's exceeding his authority. Okay, then we have questions now. What? No, it's not formal. Just tell the person he is authorized, that's all. Yes. It's, you know, we live in a world which is a world where we seek spirituality, and I admire it. I admire it. But I don't think that that's the way to go. It's a very controversial issue if you can answer amen to a brocha that you hear over the phone. So I would not, you know, I would not go there lechatchila. Let's put it that way, you know. Why you didn't hear the brocha? And the truth is, you're not even in the place that the bracha is being made. So, that's a question. One may not answer amen to something which is not a bracha. If I don't hear a bracha and I answer amen, that's a deficiency. It's called, there are terms in halacha for it. It's an orphaned amen. It's called an amen yisema. Yes, truly. Listen, whoever has the schus has the schus. Well, men are equally obligated in the mitzvah. Just women usually do the mitzvah because they're the ones that are around. They run the kitchen.
Is there more like a special schus for a woman to try to pursue more than a man?
I don't know that she gets it, but again, it's one of the mitzvahs which particularly Jewish history has given to women. So if that's given to you, you should pursue it. Yeah. I wouldn't advise you to do it, you know. You know, even if we'll just say, conclude that there's an Indian to do it, which there might be, you know, but a little bit, remember, Ezra made a takana that the laundry should be done on Thursday for Shabbos, you know? Well, yeah, the problem is, if we'll try to do it today, we'll probably Simba being Mechal Shabbos, but not be ready on time, you know?
Why should we make those who know that's what the women are working, what all that they're doing, they just make challah on Friday? That's like.
Yeah. Yes.
Does the Rav hold or do you people that collect 40 women to make challah at the same time?
Listen, you know, let's put it this way. I believe in doing mitzvahs for the schus of other people. Okay, that's part of the Torah. This 40 thing came from thin air. From thin air. You know, it started, it started probably in Yerushalayim in the back in the 1960s. There became a thing to go to the Kaisel for 40 straight days. It has no source for it. You know, we said there's some very dubious contemporary source for it, but I mean, a real source there isn't for it. So, you know, as a great Talmud of Ramesha Feinstein, Zitzal once told me, he said, there's certain svarim that are very popular beyond that which the authors were great, that's not the issue, but many svarim, the authors are great, no one looks at them. There's certain svarim that people are all involved with. So he says, you know, the world likes the occult. And consequently, you know, a certain sefer is the occult, you know. So, you know, we became a thing of schoolers, you know. Mitzvahs, we do mitzvahs, you know. I don't think the Briskerov would have gotten to all the schoolers that we do. We should daven for people. Yes, we should daven for people. We should do mitzvahs on behalf of people, but, you know, we're making them into trappings of things that don't exist. And that I do not believe, in my understanding, that the Briscoe Rovers at all would have been happy with that, you know. The mitzvahs are rich enough in their own right, doing the mitzvahs, that we don't have to package them in ways where the packaging is really Madison Avenue, not the Torah.
If the packages are touching,
I think it's also fine. Yes. Yes. Anything else? Oh. Cakes. The story is like this. What's definitely mechuyev and challah, what's clear, is if one uses water. Now, there were seven principal liquids that the Torah discusses, okay? And that's wine, honey, olive oil, milk, dew, tal, yes. What? Yeah. What did I leave out? I left out two for the moment. Blood. Yes, yeah, blood is one of them. We're not going to put that into food. And one second, and water. Okay, and water. Those are the seven. Okay, so we did seven. If one makes a dough with one of those seven, dam you can't use it, it'll leave six. It's definitely mechuyev and challah. Let's say you don't use one of those six liquids, but you use fruit juices without using water in it. So then there's a huge commotion if in the Rishonim, if it is obligated in challah or not. The Shulchan Aruch says it's obligated, and the Shach is not convinced, and the Shach says that one should take challah without a bracha in such a case. Now, Secondly, all that we talked about tonight, we're talking about a dough which is like a bread dough, a thick, heavy dough. What happens if I make a dough that, like a cake dough that you can pour? And I now bake it in an oven, and now it has the type of consistency that bread would have. So the Shulchan Aruch says that such a thing is chayev and challah. Now, so we have our cakes, which start usually, if they're non-yeast type cakes, so they're not made with a bread dough, they're made with a looser dough that pours. So it's obligated in challah if I bake it and now it becomes firm like a bread. So that is obligated in challah. So now I have the fact, but typically these cakes are not kneaded with water. They're kneaded with other fruit juices or whatever, usually not with the seven liquids that I mentioned before. So what's the status of them? Should we, and there, in fact, there are different communities that have different practices when it comes to this. I presumed after what I saw going through the Shulchan Aruch that one should be mafresh challah without a brocha in such a case. And I made inquiry today. I just wanted to know what are we actually doing here in Queens in the field, in the bakeries, what are we doing? So I was told that they're mafresh challah from everything. In other words, even from cake doughs, they're mafresh challah. So, again, so let's say you made a number of cakes. You made 5 banana cakes today. And none of them had a dough which was 3 pounds or 5 pounds. But if I put all of them together into a bag, it has a shear. So then I should be mafresh challah without a brocha. That's the halacha l'maisa. A banana cake even, same thing. Same thing. As I say, differing communities, there are communities that act differently. There are communities that understand that are not mafresh challah in such a case. Only olive oil we're talking about, yes. Otherwise, if it's again, it would be mafresh without a broch if it has a share. Whatever you need to make the dough, whatever you need. I don't think a little bit suffices. In other words, it would have to certainly be enough to make the dough, at least that much. Yeah, what's it take? Yeah, I made 5 chocolate cakes today. Yeah, I didn't use water. It's not water what we use. We use oil, we use other things. A little bit of water, right?
Wait, so if they have one of those liquids, then you say a bracha?
Yes. Correct. Same as even for 5 pounds, you don't make a bracha. From 3 pounds and up, you should be mafresh without a bracha. Yes. What? Same things, yes.
So this is only in one day. If you make it over 2-3 days.
Well, if you combine them together, let's say you put them all together, you would be mechuyev without a brocha.
Combine them together.
Yeah, in one bag. No, if this is important, is things that you put into the freezer. I made a whole bunch of different cakes or breads, challahs. None of them had a share. I packed them all up in packaging and I put them into the freezer. Do we say that the freezer combines them? It's like a kli that combines them. So I had a dispute with some of my chaverim many, many years ago about this halacha, and my contention was that since the packaging is closed, that they cannot combine. I asked it to Rabbi Yoshev, the Tzal and Rabbi Yoshev concurred. And I saw just the other day that Shlomo Zalman Auerbach argued the same thing, plus other reasons he had why the freezer is not mitzaref. So certainly in closed packaging, you don't have tzaref.
You have to open
the whole before. If you want to, you're not mechuyev to. It's not mechuyev. So leave them closed and you won't have a problem. Yes, only the same.
Do you have to do this with them?
You don't have to do it. Leave it closed and that's all. You know, what did they say? Don't fix what's not broken, right? Yes, Adina.
Does it have to be raw?
No. Yeah. Yeah, what do you think? In the matzah bakery, we take from in the matzahs at the end. We take from. I would hope that you took challah before Shabbos.
Well, yes, it's raw. And I'm saying you can take it raw.
Okay. Yes, you can take it. I said the principal time to take it is when it's raw. If they're combined already and they have the shear, it's large enough. Yeah. What? Yes. Bus? So that's maybe, again, you'd be mafish without a bracha. Okay, well, it has been a pleasure. I hope that the evening has enlightened us. Next Monday night, Bez Hashem, we're going to talk about the Ashkofis of Shabbos. I have to go out now. Sorry. Right now I gotta go out.
Thank you.